Morning.
Morning.
Morning. I hope everyone's well. How's your weekend, Anthony?
It was good. What did I do Saturday? What did I do Saturday? Saturday. Oh, Saturday. Oh, know my daughter never listens to these podcasts, but I went to a dance competition Saturday to watch her, and it was 6 long hours, Nick. 6 long hours. But they cleaned up and won a lot, so that was good. But I didn't get back till late. And then yesterday I just got pissed, went through at football for 4 long hours. Then I went out for food, and then I started working. That was me. What about you, Nick?
Competition Saturday.
What competition?
Local CrossFit one. Teams of four.
What was the workout?
First one was a snatch ladder. Second one was a thruster pull-up workout, getting as many pull-ups as you can. The third one was acid bath, which I loved in the team. So that was class. That was favorite one. Just to see the reactions of everyone. Have you done acid bath?
No, I don't. I don't think I have. I don't think I have. Remind me again, what is it?
It's five. It's simple. It's 500 row, 500 ski row, 1,000 bike.
I have done it.
But it's funny because it's one of those workouts where it's delayed. It's like 60 to 90 second delay pain in your legs, and it's the point where you can't. It's just excruciating, and it's so funny. Happened to me as well, but it's so funny watching everybody's reactions, trying to stand up and be all over the place.
Yeah, I have
It's
done
good. And then the last one was rope climbs, toes to rings. There was a worm in there. There was a salt runner. There was man makers, devil presses. Yeah, it was all right. It was all right. And yesterday, watched the nephew play football and worked.
How old is your nephew? 7.
Yeah.
So he's the same age as Layson. Is he year 2 then? Yeah, he will be, won't he? No way. Good.
And then we went in the park and they dug holes.
Sweet.
Classic. Anyway, first question. Well, not a question, but a discussion point. Really trying to be client-centered, to be a client-centered coach and ask as many, admittedly leading questions as possible to help guide clients to solve their own problems. Even though I feel like this is the best way to coach people, sometimes it feels like I'm not really helping solve their problems in that moment. For example, I had a call with a client this week who struggles mentally to find the energy to get out of bed. We went in on her values as well as the barriers and challenges she's facing. I asked loads of questions, trying to try and understand her better. After the call, I felt like I hadn't really helped her all that much because we didn't come up with anything actionable to try and change those habits. Any thoughts?
I think my first thought is it doesn't always need to be a solution in that moment with someone. I think sometimes we obviously put our own agendas in there and go, I would like there to be a solution or an action point. But actually, a solution for them sometimes is the discussion and raised self-awareness, and the chance to critically think a little bit more in and around how they're thinking and feeling and ways to get around it. So there doesn't always, my first point is there doesn't always have to be a solution. And that was something that I really struggled with. Because it clearly plays with an element of self-doubt as a coach when we're there to try and support them to or help them solve their own problem. I also think that this is a skill. And that skill needs to be practiced. And initially, in the initial stages of the skill, it sometimes feels like all you do is go round and round, and there's hardly any solutions apart from probably you at the end leading the solution. So I think it's quite a normal process to go through if you're conscious right now of wanting to improve in this area. I would say that. My last point that I would say is that if that goes on past like one conversation, it's just one conversation, is it? It doesn't have to be a solution in there, like I said a minute ago. If that does go on, and you're asking certain things and go, okay, just recapping. And I think this works really well in that scenario that you just mentioned. Recapping and summarizing what we've just discussed. And then you would recap and summarize. And then go, is there anything that I've missed? And what would be kind of the next best step for you moving forward? What would that look like to you? And for that person, all you've done is created a bit of another open question. But it leads them, I suppose, to go, actually, I would like to focus on this. And if they say, I'm not sure, I'd probably, in that scenario, I'd go, okay, no problem. Would you like me to create some options for you? So yeah, it's always keeping them a couple of things in the back pocket. But I think to summarize, doesn't always have to be a solution. And when that's a skill, when that's a new skill, sometimes it feels like you're going around the houses initially. And that's okay. That's okay. Nick, thoughts?
The only thing I'd add into that is people more often than not feel better just for talking through it and having someone to listen to them. And so, no, I'd echo that. And don't think that just because it hasn't come out with anything tangible specifically every time you speak to her isn't a waste of your time. Because you'll probably find that people just talking through things will help them more times than not.
What's a quality present in PTs you work with that you see is lacking in the rest of the industry?
Ooh. If I was going to pick one quality / attitude, view, mindset, if you could put it that way, that I think a lot of the guys we work with share is, you know what, I think there's a bit of a acceptance of delayed gratification to a certain degree. If I was going to generalize a little bit, I think a lot of the vast majority of coaches that we work with / have worked with that are making lots of progress, got great results, happy with their business, some cases moved on, some cases still with us, some cases come back. I think that is quite a common view and trait, is that they have gone for the short-term gratification and realize what sometimes that gives back to them, and that doesn't align a lot of the time with their values. And I think the acceptance of the processes they've got to go through to get what they want long term is probably a shared view. And I would say the other trait / attitude is that not every single one, but I would say a high percentage want to be great coaches. And I think those are the two biggest things that is it lacking in the industry? Yeah, I think it is.
The want of being a great coach, I don't think is lacking. The will to improve at it is lacking.
Yeah, being humble enough.
Yeah.
And having a growth mindset, because, you know, the previous question is a classic example of that, isn't it?
I was just going to use that one.
So yeah, no, I'd agree actually. Yeah, I think everyone wants to be a good coach, but the time it takes to be a great coach, a lot of people aren't willing to do, or they don't I think they don't particularly understand the, what's the word I'm looking for here? The fact that you've got to go through really frustrating points with clients, like Sam, you can go off the call of that and be like quite frustrated and quite downhearted sometimes because, oh shit, it hasn't come out with like this or this. Or actually, you know, that's the starting point of planting the seed for things to come in the future. So yeah, I'd agree. When changing systems and delivery of service, how can you encourage existing / old clients to follow new formats?
Listen, in general, people don't like change, do they? So I think you've got to coach some people through change, which if that was me, if I'm changing a system or the way I deliver it, I might do it three ways. Deliver it to the group and take them through how-tos in a live scenario. So they're all together. I would probably then record that and leave it somewhere for them to watch back if they need to, but then more so I'd book them in one-to-one just to go through the changes and just to see what their concerns or barriers are with them changes to the systems and delivery. We can't expect people just get it and crack on with it. So yeah, I personally would make sure that you do them three things. I also think there's an element of that they need to understand why and how it's going to benefit them, a bit like sales, isn't it? So being crystal clear with the new benefits. And when you've got a new system, so say, for example, you're changing software, it's you being excited about it in the business and sharing snippets of it beforehand and stuff like that really helps. But yeah, I would deliver it and over-communicate it because then you will probably become less frustrated with people not using it. Anything you'd add?
Treat it as an internal marketing campaign, almost. I think then you'll kind of hit the nail on the head with what you've just gone through. And then the second thing is treat it as a bit of like a, give people tasters of it and don't throw everything at people all at once. Like treat it as a new client coming into service and drip feed the relevant information, walk them through it, and persevere with it as well. Next.
How to take time off as a PT and not having to cram sessions in before your holiday or before your holiday or after it, so you're overworked. Is there a way that you can give clients more value other than just valuing your program based on an hourly rate, and how would you communicate that to a new client?
It's quite a long answer to this, but I'll try and give you bullet points. I think the first thing is look at the source of why this is happening, and it's probably because the way you position what people are purchasing is based on an hourly rate, i.e. I give you an hour session, you give me money in the rawest of form. So I think the first thing is starting at the beginning and thinking of how we can position that as a whole service and aligning the payment option with that and taking the focus off the hourly rate, off the number of sessions so much that actually we are paying for a whole service and it's on a monthly basis. That then allows you to have build up almost like, think of it like, you know, when you have holiday accrued over a year with a company and it's based on how much time you're working. It's kind of similar if you think of it from that manner. So if I'm charging, if someone's with me for 12 months, I'm having 12 payments each month, right? 52 weeks of the year. So you can actually start to accrue holiday technically. And essentially it's the way you present that in front of your clients. So paying monthly, charging for the whole service, and in that monthly cost, you are factoring in X amount of holiday that you've accrued over the year. Because some months you'll do, if they're doing twice a week with you, some months you'll do 9 sessions, some months you'll do 10 sessions, some of the way the months fall, you'll do an extra one, blah, 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 and that will accrue you holiday. So it's about looking at how you model your finances and present your service. in a short answer. The longer answer is will work. I don't know who this is, but I'm assuming it's someone new.
Must be.
Yeah, so we'll work on that. I think this is the next one. If you both were in complete charge of the full-time to
fitness team or PT model
of commercial gyms, what would that look like?
I would have it really clean and simple. I would have an employed coach model for a small number of full-time coaches who were paid well enough to not need to necessarily personal train straight away, probably within the first year. It gives people a bit of a leg up coming off their level three, because let's be honest, the commercial gym sector is the ones where people go to when they've come through the level three, but there's immediate pressure on straight away. So that pressure is good, but I think there's a better way of going about it, especially these days. So I would have small, depending on the size of the gym and the footfall and all of that, for argument's sake, 4 full-time employed coaches that took care of certain things like your inductions, like seminars, workshops, classes, the day-to-day operations of the facility, plus elements of some stuff that can get them in front of people and coach people. So for argument's sake, there would be a product or a service that they would deliver that gets them in front of, say, small groups of people that the gym sells, makes money from, but offsets the cost of them employed PTs. So I would have employed for small, full-time, small number, but then to help also offset that cost with that product and service that I've just mentioned that still gets new PTs in front of people one-to-one and group, I would then have a full support system for that PT within the first year to go through basically a guided mentorship to get them to a point of where after a year, 18 months or something like that, they then progress into a full rental model, which was a sliding scale. So I would have employed coach model and then a rental model clean. But then the progress from that is on a sliding scale. So let's say it's over a 3 to 6 month period where the rent goes gradually up over time. And only the pressure is time, not sessions, not people, it's time. But then you've kind of had like an 12 to 18 month internship into the industry, coaching people. You've been paid a fairly decent wage to keep you going. And then you've progressed onto a rental model where you're fully self-employed in the gym. And the rental model, obviously, if you do it properly, should offset the cost for the employed coach model. That's how I would run it. And then there was this ongoing CPD, ongoing mentorship for the rental PTs as well. So there's that. Still that, even though it's not classed as a team because they're self-employed, there's still that team unity of a good culture of coaching within that facility. Thoughts, Nick?
No, nothing to add.
Oh. Nailed that. How do I incorporate a holiday process into my client agreement? I charge per month, not per week. So how do I articulate that I will be taking a week off each quarter? Hope that makes sense.
Similar to what I just explained a question or two beforehand. I think the first simple thing for clients is that you articulate it in a way that it's dead simple to understand, i.e. I have incorporated me taking off X amount of time over the course of a year in your price point. So when it comes to me taking holiday, it's already accommodated in that price point. And if they then ask, well, how does that work? Then you go on and explain the way I explained earlier in regards to basically accruing holiday over the year, so to speak, 12 payments versus 52 weeks of the year, longer weeks, longer months. Sometimes doing 9 sessions if a month lands on this particular day, so forth and so forth. So I keep it really, really simple. Understand it yourself. And it's simple as that. Simple as that. What's lined up for the post-conference gig on Friday and Saturday? Need to know how many change of clothes to bring.
You're getting an email about this tomorrow. Say again.
Is that Matt Talbot asking that?
So Friday, we're going to, so we finish at 5:30. You've got a little hour and a half, 2 hours to do what the hell you want, whether you want to go Christmas markets or whatever. Then we're meeting at Freight Island, which is where we went on the Friday last time that everyone enjoyed. So we're going back there again. On the Saturday, we are finishing at 5:30 again. But then we're going straight into Cloud 23, which is in the Hilton. And then we're going to over the road, basically, to a place called Duke's 92. So that's that. Next question. I think I've heard Nick say he is or was an introvert. And then it took some work to go to go and talk to people on cruise ships. I'm very introverted too, and it always takes me a lot of energy to get started on my check-ins, calls, or sessions. I love what I do, but my comfort zone is behind my laptop screen, and it doesn't seem to improve much with time. Do you have any advice to make it easier?
I think you've got to, force yourself into situations. Like I think I wrote an email or something about this a while ago. I think you've got to force yourself into those situations. Whether that is putting your hand up to do something, for someone, to opting into running an event, to doing a workshop, to doing a seminar, and really taking, putting things in place so you can't back out of it. I think that those are the first starting points. I genuinely think they are. And I think that has to align with what you like to talk about, what you're passionate about doing, especially so that it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel, as in like when you're actually doing it, it doesn't feel forced. It's something you can talk about all day. It doesn't take a lot of energy to, you know, talk about those particular things because it's what you love to do. But the first thing is, I think, external accountability to force you outside of that comfort zone. For me, it was, you know, I think the first, I think it was the first big one, the cruise ship, because I had to learn exercise to music. I had to learn step, aerobics, Pilates, yoga, spin, all sorts of shit that was completely outside my comfort zone. And I knew that going in. But it was a case of, I applied, I got the job, and I had to do it. Like there was no kind of backing out. So that's the first thing I would say is look at things that you would normally put off and create the account, like strong accountability behind it to make you do it. I think that's what helped me. Anything you'd add opposite?
No, because I think, listen, no one's an extrovert, are they? And I think there's things that I can relate to that is your personality type as well. Do you know what I mean? So, I think what you've just said is important in regards to putting you in positions where you have to force yourself to take action and that extreme accountability. And then making sure that what you're doing it for has a level of meaning. Like you can attach meaning to why you did what you did whilst traveling the world and stuff like that. And there's a high level of meaning behind it, isn't there? So the benefits of that far outweigh the feeling of feeling uncomfortable. So yeah, that's all I would say, really. Next question. Is that yours?
Mine. What's the most common problem coaches have that you come across, and how do you help them overcome it?
It's by far the most common problem is generating leads from your marketing. That's the most common problem that most PTs have. There is an element on this where I'm torn of going, that's a skill problem, but it's more so a will problem on it as well in regards to self-limiting beliefs, self-doubt and all that. And I think a lot of that self-limiting beliefs and self-doubt would be squashed with how we help them overcome it, how we help you overcome it, is first of all, is getting better at the skill of marketing and lead generating, right? But then it's having the will to plan it. Most PTs sit down and as soon as they learn what they need to do, go and put it into action with no thought or rhyme or reason behind it or strategy to it. So in my opinion, the most common problem most coaches have is marketing lead generation. How we help them overcome it is give you context and understanding, but also help you apply that. And I think helping you apply it is more so, we really stress the importance of having a plan and having a strategy for it, giving it the time it deserves, not just on a monthly basis with a really detailed plan, but making sure that you've got at least probably about any range between 20 to 40% of your week is physically on marketing lead generation. It might sound a lot for some people, but that's what's needed to get better at a skill, right? So we help people with that in terms of understanding the context behind it, the why behind it, different strategies and tactics. And I'm talking about marketing lead generation as a whole. Like, tactics on Instagram change all of the time because of the algorithm. I'm not talking about that. It's more so going, right, this is my aim, this is my plan, and this is how I'm going to prioritize my work to get better at this marketing and start to, I suppose, have more confidence and self-belief off the back of feeling successful from it. So, rambled a bit there, but that's what I would say. Anything you would add to that or another example?
No.
My other one on that and where I was torn is, for me, as basic as it sounds, is planning and prioritizing your schedule and your week. Because for me, that's the foundation of your action taking. And if that's not there, you're left with that paradox of choice. Like, I don't know if any of you have ever... So here's an example, right? Wednesday is the day in my week that I dread the most. Might sound a bit strange, but Wednesday's the day that I give myself the most amount of flexibility in priority management and all of that type of stuff, purely just in case something comes up, right? But there's hours there that's not within my schedule. And I'm like, well, I need to go and to check my priority list and go to the top. But then what that does is, because I haven't got a task or a focus there, sometimes I've got this paradox of choice. And what I'll do is naturally my personality dips in, skims the surface of one thing, changes to another, then goes to another. And by the end of it, I've sat there for an hour to 2 hours and I've done fuck all apart from skimming the surface of a few tasks. So sometimes when you've got that paradox of choice, which most PTs have within your schedule, because you've got big chunks of gaps, that leads you to not feeling like you get a lot done, going around in circles all the time, not knowing what to prioritize and focus on, putting off the things that you need to do for the things that you want to do. So I think that's a big common problem coaches have, but they just don't realize it's a massive problem until they start to get more meticulous with your schedule and priority management. And that's the only thing that I would add to that. How do you prioritize? Oh, weird. Next question is, how do you prioritize when everything is a priority?
Yeah. It's going to come back to, it was something I was going to add on to that, but it was the same answer for this question, which relates to the last question. The very first thing is goals, is what do you want from your business? What do you want your business to look like? What do you want to gain from it? What impact do you want to have? Who do you want to work with? What's the return you want to get? Lifestyle you want to live? Because ultimately, like you say, everything is a priority because we are the marketer, we do the finance, we do the back end, the admin, we deliver the service, we do all these things, and everything's important, but not everything's urgent and important. So it's identifying, right, this is where I want to be in the long term. Now, breaking that down into the first milestone, right, well, this is the first thing I need to focus on, which is aligned with that. So let me get rid of all of the important but non-urgent tasks and focus on the urgent and important tasks to get me to that milestone. And I think the same thing applies to the previous question, is, in my opinion, people find that difficult because it's not hard to come up with a goal, but it's hard to create meaning and give yourself time to give meaning behind the goal. And it's hard then to commit to that through fear of failure a lot of the time. So yeah, it kind of relates to the previous question, but that is how you prioritize essentially.
Yeah, and you could argue that that's the biggest problem coaches have, because everything stems off the back of that, right? Yeah, but in regards to skill, it's marketing. But yeah, you're right on that.
And you've got to be relentless with it as well. You've got to be quite hard on going, yeah, I can, this is what, and it's one of those things where you've got that choice again of, this is what I like to do, this is what I'm comfortable at, so I'll, yeah, this isn't important, but actually I can get this done quickly. So that'll still stay on the task list this week. But the hard things, they're just going to be put off and put off and put off and put off. Or the things that take longer or are new, those are things that will be put off, put off, put off, put off. But those are generally the things that you need to do. So, yeah.
Next one. Is it you?
I didn't see those more. This isn't the snappiest of questions. Okay. I have a few leads who come to anything that I do that is free, like my Saturday boot camp, free 2-week trial of weekday boot camp, first to sign up to a freebie. I know there is absolutely no chance of them ever working with me. One has signed up to a free taste session for small group PT, which they will never sign up to. Taking a spot that could have been used by a genuine potential client. I can't keep them off the taste session, but in the future, I'm thinking I will leave them off any taste the session invites so that space isn't wasted. Short-sighted or realistic?
I think from that explanation, without seeing how many times they come to these three things, I think it's realistic. That's my opinion. If it's happened a lot, if it's just a few times, then I would just keep letting it run its course, because you just never know. I know you put there is absolutely no chance, but I've thought about that about so many people in the past that have ended up converting. So there's a big part of me that goes, I'd have to look at the data to see how many visits they've come to the boot camp, the trial and all of that. And if it's not that many, then I would just continue. But if it is quite a lot and you're into double figures of them attending all of this and someone else could have had their spot, then I think it's realistic. So I know that probably doesn't help, but I would always go off, right, my emotion's telling me that these are fucking after a freebie all of the time, but actually the facts are they've only been on three things. Then I'd be okay keeping them there. That would be my opinion anyway. About you?
I would tend to just, okay, I think it's probably triggered you because of the numbers. It's probably taken a spot off something that is quite limited. So I can understand your thought process through that, but I also have experienced a massive number of times people who are on the email list or on the listen to the podcast, who have downloaded the free thing, that have joined many courses, that have been on calls for I would say longer than 12 months, and you think no, but they end up doing so. I think if it's on a limited basis like this, I think be smart about it, like you put in there, if you want to open it up to more people. But I also think that you can't count people out ever, because you just don't know. So in some way, if they're on your mailing list, they're still in your network, aren't they?
What do you do when you aren't getting much engagement or inquiries?
The first thing, because I think I know who this is. There we go. The first thing is that I would do a bit of a checklist of what I am actually physically doing with my marketing right now. So on one end of the spectrum, if I'm doing a lot of nurturing style, value-based content, and I'm not putting calls to action out there, I'm not being more direct, or it's not specific to my demographic, I'll change those things. If I'm doing not a lot of value add or nurturing and just going quickly out with lots of calls to action, then I know that I've got to reverse engineer that and do more value-based stuff, be more specific with my demographic. If I'm doing both of those, all of that very organically, and what's the phrase I'm looking for? I'm treating it as a marketing campaign, i.e. I'm not just turning up out of the blue, asking for the business without nurturing anyone. It's specific to my demographic. Am I having enough conversations? Am I giving people an opportunity to be nurtured? So am I just using one platform of social media? Am I getting them on an email list? Am I getting them on a lead magnet? Am I talking to them in DM, so forth and so forth? So I'd look at what I'm doing now specifically. For this person, I don't know who it is yet, but for anyone in the academy, we have literally got a checklist of this stuff that's in the new dashboard, which you can have. I've sent it out already. It's been out already, where you can quickly identify what you are doing and what you're missing out of your marketing that is going to create engagement and or inquiries. So yeah, I would take a step back, assess what you're doing, assess what is missing, and obviously start to put in place what's missing. Anything you'd add?
Yeah, honestly, you have to reflect on the facts of what you've done or not done. If you've gone a period of time, I'm just going to say the same as you here, but if you've gone a period of time really going out with call to actions and selling to people, people are going to shut down in regards to engagement inquiries. So like Nick said, then that needs to be flipped. And your focus should be on a real solid plan, probably gaining some leads to generate some inquiries later on, being patient on the fact that probably you just need to sit down and really map out what the non-negotiables are to that plan. So you basically fix yourself on the process and not the outcome. And obviously what helps with that is driving some element of lead magnet. But there has to be a strategy. So for me, that means that if you've gone 30, let's say you've gone 30 days without any inquiries or engagement, that's a good period of time to look back and go, right, what's not worked? Okay, what can I learn from that? What do I need to put in place and plan forward? And I need to put a really solid plan in place. It can't just be reactive and then go, bang, I'm going to sell. Because people are just shut down. Yeah, because a lot of the time this is us in a just busy state that we aren't being creative. We're not giving it enough thought. That's genuinely what you should go through. And that's that. Some good questions. Longer Q&A than usual, that, wasn't it? Really good. Okay. Any final thoughts?
No, I don't think, well, except for if you are listening, haven't got your tickets and around Friday, Saturday, link in the show notes, get your tickets, be there. Because if anything triggered you today on the questions, all of that will be, pretty much all of that will be addressed over the weekend. Apart from that, nada.
Hey, people. See you soon. Bye-bye.